Jim said that when you start choking up, you gotta cough. I'm not sure if it's gonna work. Have the old box. You know, we all have our own impressions. See, I am taller than you are. Of our mothers, our own histories, our own views. And when this week started, I knew she wasn't going to last a week. And I actually started Monday morning, she died Tuesday night, writing her obituary. Not because I was anticipating her death necessarily more, and I want to get her in perspective in my own mind. The one thing I've always had a problem with is time. I don't measure time. I can't see time. I don't know what happened 2 years ago. I don't know what happened yesterday. If something happened 2 years ago, it seems like it happened yesterday, and vice versa. When I was a child, time, I think for most of us, passed very slowly. When I'm an adult, I think. Time passes by very fast. So I've had a hard time in the past few years trying to figure out exactly what the timing of her life is. It was a puzzle to me. So I sat down this week and I started to write down and test everybody that they'll attest to that I was asking, okay, when does she do this and when does she do that? And what I realized is that there was a very short time and she was mixed with times of incredible activity and times of non-activity. But for the most part, she was always active, she was always moving. The Brazilian flag on the globe has the term ordem, if I have that right, ordem e progresso. I can't say that, choked up a little bit. It means order and progress, and that defines my mother. Now, we always think our mothers are superhuman. I think Jim mentioned the fact, or inferred it, that she wasn't superhuman. She was a human. She was a person. She had everything that a human person desires. She had many needs, many strengths, and many weaknesses, just like everybody else. And I think the thing that set her apart from most people, got to focus on the paper. She had a keen intellect. She had a very strong sense of responsibility. And she had a drive. She was, to a large degree, an unstoppable force. Never met, not that she couldn't move. Now, I made a mistake on the obituary. I said that she started her love of teaching when she ran the Ramsey Institute in Brazil. But she actually started much earlier than that. I learned that this week. She started a professional teaching career in 1945. Realizing that she was born in 1930, makes that age right around 15. And she taught at a school for engineers, taught them English. She didn't know English very well, of course. She was just 15 years old. She learned with her brother, Fabio. They would compete with each other, see who could learn English faster. And I actually take my glasses off work. I can't see you very well. And I can see the paper better. I'm getting old. I can't imagine, as a teacher, having the guts to walk into a classroom when you're 15 and teach a bunch of older people something that they didn't know and you barely knew. Her life, of course, as she described it to us, was spent with a great deal of happiness, times of intense activity, and times of joy, and times of great pain. In 1951, she was baptized into this church. In 1954, this is one of the periods of great activity, by the way. In 1954, she served a mission in Brazil. She's one of the first lady missionaries there. And her job quickly turned into basically running the mission. Most of the missionaries didn't know Portuguese. And she acted as translator, as negotiator, as manager. And she worked with the president of the mission to basically run the mission. She's also usually at the right time and at the right place for something to happen. And this time she was with President David O. McKay. And she was asked to be his translator during his world tour, that little span of time that he was in Brazil. And this was one of her key points in her life, because it really changed her life. President McKay asked her after that episode to come to Utah, attend BYU, which she did. And she came to the United States after her mission was over in 1955. And lived with President Marquis Peterson and his family, getting ready to go to BYU. And by the way, Sister Peterson begged her, and I quote from my mother, on her hands and knees, not to go to BYU. Please, please go to the University of Utah. It's a much better school. I think I know where Sister Peterson's loyalties lie. She went to BYU. And during that summer, actually, before she started at the Y, she toured around with the Petersons, and one of the tours took her to California. And she was amazed, I think because it was sort of like her homeland of Brazil, of all the agriculture, especially, she mentioned to me, all the nut orchards. She saw all these nut orchards everywhere. And when she started school at BYU, she gave firesides, because everybody wanted to know about BYU. She was a unique person, and she was a foreigner. She knew she was exotic. She knew different things. So, of course, they asked these people to give firesides. I've never given one, which kind of explains a lot. But when she was finished, and during the question and answer period, she was asked by some person that thought he was a little bit too smart in the background, now, Brazil, isn't that where all the nuts come from? Everybody did the same thing. They gasped. My mother didn't have enough of a handle on the English language to catch the pun. And she says, with a straight face, not understanding what the joke was all about, well, it's true, we do grow a lot of nuts in Brazil, but they seem to cultivate them to a far greater extent here in the United States. I'm glad you didn't take that one. I was afraid he was going to take that talk. It's my favorite one. She married in 1956 to Jimmy D. Ramsey. And this represents a period in life which was very busy, at least to me. I guess I tend to be kind of lazy. She was not only married, went to school, had two children, but she translated the Articles of Faith by Talmage, the entire thing during those 4 years. When we moved to Brazil in the early 60s, and she started her school, that was a very happy time for her. She loved being with her family. She always loved being with her family. As a matter of fact, I think she told one of us if she could figure out a way to have all four of us move back in that house, she would. The wife's going to stay over there, but, you know. The grandkids, you know, it'll be okay. And she figured something out. When we returned to the United States in 66, and in 69 when the marriage dissolved, she had a lot of choices to make. I teach the 14, 15-year-old age group in Sunday school, and when we come to a lesson that talks about choices, I use this one. Next page. I don't know if it works. Life is about choices, and she made choices. When she was faced with the task of raising the four of us, her choice was one. How do I do this? How do I raise these four brats in a way that they need to be raised in order to give them all the possible choices in life, opportunities in life, I guess. And she decided she'd go back to school. Now, I in a way, followed in her footsteps. I went back to school. Actually, never left, I guess. And completing my master's and PhD in 6 years, like you should. She did it in 3.5, master's and PhD. That includes a 500-page dissertation. And it includes taking care of two of us, living on food stamps, living on anything that would provide her the the ability to reach that goal. She hated to be dependent on anybody, but she did what she had to, and she took advantage of what she had to in order to get what she needed. She only did this, and raising my own kids, I realized that sometimes, and I do this the same thing, we need things right now. We want to go out and buy things right now. I go out and buy any tool I want right now. She knew this wasn't going to be easy. It's going to be 5 or 6 years with a lot of work, with some goal at the end. Today we want goals tomorrow. We want to meet them tomorrow. She knew it was going to take a long time, and she worked for it. When we moved to Utah, she started her career here. She realized that she didn't have enough money. I guess BYU doesn't pay very well. Is that true? They don't pay very well Utah State either. She didn't have the money to provide the home she wanted. So she met a goal, but she had another goal. She had another problem. And she always had these problems, and she always met them head on, and that was what made her unique. She never missed a problem. If she had a problem, she would solve it. She wouldn't ignore it. And she looked for homes. She couldn't find a home that she could afford. So in this sense, she couldn't reach her goal, and Muhammad wouldn't come to the mountain. So she brought Muhammad to the mountain. She found a home that was going to be destroyed. She picked it up off its foundation, moved it a mile and a half, planted it somewhere else, and built a home there. That was the way she provided a home. Very unique way, very different, very courageous, very brave. The past 20-some-odd years, with the exception of the last 5 or 10, it's been very calm for her. She's been doing what she loved to do, raise her children, teach, have fun with her students, do whatever it took just to enjoy herself, and she did. The one thing that she wants, or has told my brother Paul, that she wants on her headstone, is a phrase, I did my damnedest, and she did. And it's going to go there, by the way. I got one more paragraph to make it through, so bear with me. We all find terms to describe our mothers. And when I was searching for one this morning, I realized that I had one all the time. And 200 years ago, 203 years ago, Thomas Jefferson was trying to sell his great vision of sending someone across the Northwest Territory to the Pacific Ocean. And when he chose Meriwether Lewis to do this job, he wrote a note to Congress. And he started it with the phrase, with undaunted courage. Tom didn't know he was talking about her.